Thank you. So yeah, it's an interesting area to be in. I come from bioenergy. I'm an engineer, and I was just saying earlier that this is a very similar area of extension because you're talking to people that maybe don't really want to talk about the subject that you're trying to deliver to them. So there's a bit of a challenge in there in getting this across to sort of a resistant audience. I'm going to tell a story about the Climate Learning Network. This is something we're putting together for the USDA. It's launched in a small form, and it's actually working on a larger form right now. A lot of partners involved, so really this is a story of partners about how we got a lot of people together to work on the same thing and try to get this message across to the producers. So I'm at the University of Georgia in the College of Engineering. I partner with Southern Regional Extension Forestry, which is actually headquartered at the University of Georgia. And this is a unique organization because it covers 13 states in the South. So there's a lot of forestry down there. When we lost a lot of agents in 2008, Southern Regional Extension Forestry was there because we actually provide that forestry agent to every state. So if a state doesn't have a forestry agent, we actually fill that gap. So you can see the states here. We go all the way from Texas up to Virginia. A lot of diversity there, but we're focusing just on forestry and the states providing them with tools, information, support to get their job done, especially if they don't have a specialist in forestry. We work on professional development, outreach and education, applied research and technology and development, but really what we're looking at is that professional development for extension agents here. So we want to get them climate literate, and this is one avenue to do that. So as we go on, you'll see how this evolved out of working with this office. One thing that we have that's unique, I think, that really has been helpful to us is we have a great marketing and graphic design department. It's not something you normally think about in extension, but making things look good can make all the difference in the world. I'm colorblind, and I'm spatially and aesthetically challenged, so it's really great having these people to back me up. You're going to see a slide later that I did, and you're going to know which one it was. I had help with most of the rest of them, but it's really been great because when you give them something that's polished, extension agents respond better. There's no question about it. One thing that we did that kind of set the stage for this is my predecessor, Leslie Bobby, did a survey of forest professionals about climate change. And what you find is you sort of find what you find with the United States in general. About a third are interested in it. About a third believe it's caused by humans. About a third think that it's, you know, a bunch of nonsense. They really sort of follow the trends that you see in society as a whole. Again, this makes it a little more difficult to communicate to extension professionals, forestry professionals. In this case, I think we'll probably hear a little bit later from Cornell about what they found. You know, you're talking to one-third of your audience that doesn't really want to talk about this. However, when you get them on the field, they can't deny that those changes are happening, and there's some techniques we can use to make sure that they acknowledge that. And what we do find is a lot of them want to learn about working with climate variability on the farm. They don't want to talk about, you know, how is it caused, what can we do to stop it, but they are willing to talk about these changes that we're going to talk a lot about today and that we've been talking about throughout this entire conference. Okay, so another big partner in this is eExtension. eExtension is the online presence of Cooperative Extension. It's been around, I think, since the late 90s. At one point, all the land-grant universities were contributing to eExtension and funding it. And they were providing information directly to the ground. So they were basically stepping in when there wasn't an agent, giving an electronic resource for farmers, foresters, producers to go and get that information. And the community of practice is how this was done. So we have communities of practice and a bunch of different topics. Climate, forests, and woodlands was sort of the climate go-to under the old regime that eExtension was following. In the past couple of years, eExtension has taken a new turn. They have a new strategy where they're actually going to train extension agents now. It makes a lot more sense. We can reach agents that can reach a lot more people than we can directly with eExtension. So basically what we have is a new paradigm where we're starting to train agents using eExtension. Climate is a big focus of eExtension, so this all ties together. I promise that this is all going to make sense in a little bit. And they do this using innovation. They're really hung up on innovation right now, using a lot of different new tools, developing new tools, and trying a lot of tools, some of which are great, some of which are not. So we've been guinea pigs for doing that as well. We have a new CEO who isn't even from eExtension. She actually ran Michigan State Global, which is their global exchange program, but she comes with a lot of experience in using innovative technologies to teach people, so that's why she was selected. Her name is Chris Geis. It's been a pleasure working with her, and now we've also gone to a voluntary model now, so the members of eExtension are actually volunteering to pay into the system, so you're no longer forced to be a part of it. We lost a few schools along the way, but we do have a pretty big group of member schools that still contribute to eExtension. In 2015, they picked two topics to focus on. One of them is climate literacy. And they have this I3 core, which is a bunch of people around the country working in extension that are focused on these topics, doing very specific high-impact projects. So through 2015, 2016, we saw a lot of great projects and tools developed by these extension agents and extension personnel through the system, and this will continue through 2017. There's 200 to start. They're hoping to get 2,000 involved by 2017. And this is part of the I3 issue core. So we're looking at issues, impact, and innovation. And again, innovation's been really helpful here because what we're trying to do with the Climate Learning Network is deliver information about a controversial subject in an innovative way that we can get it across to all extension agents and help them incorporate climate change into their day-to-day decision-making. All right, a third partner in this is the USDA Climate Hubs. So in 2014, Secretary Vilsack established 7 climate hubs and 3 sub-hubs, which have now graduated to regular hubs. So we have 10 climate hubs across the country that are headquartered at USDA or Forest Service offices. And this is sort of set up to do translation of research that's going on in all the land grants at the agencies in the federal government and get this out to the land. So it's trying to increase productivity of working lands under changing climate. So we're not just trying to maintain where we are, we're actually trying to improve our production under a changing climate, which is, of course, is no easy task. So the vision is to increase this production on our working lands and to take science-based information and get it out to people that can use it, get it on the land, and start help improving production using those tools. Another big partner in this has been the AFRI-CAPS, the Coordinated Agricultural Projects. Now, all these people have extension components that they're using, all these different grants, the CAPS, but what we're trying to do is be a tool for them, be a tool for the hubs, and supply another conduit through the Climate Learning Network to get this information out on the ground. So while they're developing tools, we want to be a tool for them that they can use to get their job done and make life easier for them. Okay, so this is the ugly slide that I was talking about earlier. This is what you get when you have good graphic designers do logos and an engineer doing a slide. So we're going to go ahead and start building the network that we have here. So again, Southern Regional Extension Forestry is where this all started. I came and started working with them on this project. It's in the College of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences at the University of Georgia. I'm in the College of Engineering. We'll throw in forestry there, too, since we're part of the forestry school there, too, so we get this ugly little thing started in the corner. But what we had is NEPA and USDA working with the climate hubs and trying to figure out how to get the information out onto the ground. And they thought they'd give them a little bit more help than they already had. They talked to eExtension, who found us. So USDA's passing resources through eExtension to us. We have the climate hubs providing us information. We have all the CAPS also providing us with information. And then there's cooperative extension. We're taking that information that's either translated already or packaged at the Climate Learning Network, giving that to cooperative extension, and then delivering that to farmers and foresters. We'll give them some logos because everybody else had logos. But really, we're looking at feedback coming back from the land, telling us what we can do better, how we can help them more. Same with cooperative extension. We're working with the agents, trying to get feedback from them, trying to figure out what they need, designing the tools that they can use the way they want them, and then feeding back up to USDA. And one thing I want to stress here is that there's really feedback going in all directions here. So the climate hubs are working directly with the extension. They're working directly with extension agents. They're working directly with farmers. Same with those coordinated agricultural projects. So there's a lot of information being exchanged here. One big challenge, and I think we can actually talk about this today since we have so many projects we're going to be discussing, is how do we not duplicate efforts? If there's something out there that we can use, we want to find that and use it to get our job done without having to reinvent the wheel. And I hope today to find some of that out. So then we come to the Climate Learning Network. So this is that big network that we were talking about. Right now, there's about 300 agents that are involved with this. We have 30 guinea pigs that we're working with directly to get some of our tools out there and refined. We have this new website that we launched at the beginning of 2016. So the products that we're making, we have e-learning modules, webinars. We do a monthly webinar, and then we do sporadic other webinars to keep the gaps filled. We've done needs assessments of both our constituents and of the hubs themselves. And then we have a newsletter that keeps people informed as well as social media. One thing that was interesting, we were working with the Northeast Hub, and the coordinator of the Northeast Hub found that a lot of the producers just want an old-school listserv where they can talk about their crop in their region and the problems that they're seeing. So we just set this up. We're piloting this in the Northeast region right now. So this is just old school. You email, and a bunch of people get the email and email it back. And it's funny, she's a younger person, and she had never seen like a listserv before, like just, you know, the kind that we've been getting for years. And it's interesting because the millennials are actually taking to that, which of all things, I never thought I'd be working on a listserv, but we're actually getting a pretty good response out of it. So that was one I didn't expect to see. The big thing that we're working on right now is climate literacy training. So this project had started as an East Coast pilot project where we're just working with the Northeast and Southeast hubs just to see if there was any viability there. And we got a lot of great response from those two hubs. We took it out from there to the Pacific Northwest, started working with the Wheat Cap out there as well, got a lot of good responses out there, and then suddenly they throw it at me, okay, this is going to go national. So I'm one person working part-time on this, trying to make a national extension program. We already know how hard it's been to make a regional extension program, so this is a big challenge that we're facing here. So instead of trying to go to each region and, you know, get this big network going, the thing that we all step back and realize, we need climate literacy for our extension agents. And when I say climate literacy, this is the ability to understand issues with climate and incorporate this into our day-to-day decision-making. So when they're on the ground talking to the farmers, talking to the foresters, they're not saying, oh, let's discuss climate change because you need to really think about this. But when they're making recommendations, when they're going through the options that they have, they're actually taking climate change into consideration. And this, again, doesn't have to evolve where it's coming from, who's causing it. What we're doing is reacting, and we're taking what we're given and making it more effective. And again, we're trying to increase productivity on these lands in the face of climate change, so we really need to consider that with our day-to-day. Okay, so our climate literacy program that we're working on right now, this is underway. We're in about phase two, I'd say, of about five that they're working on right now. So we have 40 guinea pigs that will be the people that we work with to get this thing started and get them certified. We're working with people who understand climate, so they're going to give us feedback that we can actually use. We're not trying to teach them anything they don't know. We're actually trying to get them to tell us, okay, is an extension agent going to respond to this? You're an extension agent. You understand climate. How are they going to respond to this? So we started out with consensus-guided competency identification. And what this meant is we got a bunch of climate experts in a room, and we fought it out. What does an extension agent need to know? Not everything in the world. We can't teach them everything about climate. What key things can we teach them that they can use to help make decisions on the ground? So this was a two-day virtual competency development. This is something you normally do in a room, but we actually did it online. It was consensus-driven, so we had to all agree before we moved on, which took a long time to get these experts to work together. But I think we got a really great list of competencies out of them when we were done. And this is obviously hard to read, but this is about one-tenth of what we've done, getting these competencies done. So what this allows you to do is it allows you to decide what you're going to teach them. It allows you to decide how you're going to test them on that. So assessment is a big part of this. And when we're developing this, we're actually looking at assessment from the beginning. So we're not going back and saying, okay, what did they learn? How do we test them on this? We know what the questions are going to be before we teach them, so we can actually design the curriculum around that. Okay, so again, we have a curator who's going online and trying to find all the existing information and corral that. And we're using tagging, electronic tagging, so this has been very difficult to design, but we're about halfway through this process. So say there's a YouTube video that's an hour long, and you need 20 minutes for your extension agents. The rest of it is superfluous or something that they've already learned. We can actually go in there and yank that 20 minutes out, deliver that to our extension agent, and they don't have to watch that whole video. It's an online database that actually takes care of this. It's way beyond me, but it's starting to work, so I'm actually pretty excited about that. This way we can customize our training. So not only are we targeting it towards extension agents, but we can actually regionalize this as well. If we have a database big enough, we can deliver people information just about their region, so they don't have to learn stuff about, let's say, cotton. We were talking about cotton earlier. You know, if you're in the Southeast, that's great. If you're in the Midwest, you don't need to know what's going to happen with cotton. So we can take that out of their training, and you develop these different competencies for different regions. Pretty exciting. It's getting there. It's getting there. One thing that we needed to do really quickly at the beginning of this project came down from the top down, and we were told to make 6 e-learning modules. That was one of our first deliverables. So we had to do this very rapidly. We had about 9 months to do 6 e-learning modules starting from nothing. So we developed this process called WebEd, which is webinar-based e-learning development. And basically what we're doing is we're taking webinars and converting them to online modules, but we're doing it in a very repetitive and encapsulated way that allows us to do it very quickly. developing the template, which is done in Adobe Captivate, and if anyone's ever used that, it's quite a challenge to use that software. That took the 6 months, getting that template down. But now that we have a template, we can run a webinar, and within 2 weeks, we can have an online e-learning module, which has assessment built into it, online and running. So it's pretty exciting now that we've gone through the sort of, you know, growing pains of getting it together. This is what our modules look like. There's 7 of these available right now on the Climate Learning Network. They all have to do with climate-based information for extension agents. And then we don't get rid of the webinars. We actually offer CEUs for these webinars. We have about 25 webinars that we've done so far. And again, there's only 7 of those modules out, so there's a lot more information that's out there. We have this climate science webinar portal that's available to extension agents. And one thing that's been really popular, and again, it's kind of like that the listserv thing that I was shocked that people were really excited about, we have this green savings calculator on there. So we can say instead of having a meeting like this, if all of you were doing this as a webinar, we can quantify how much energy we saved, how much carbon we saved. And this is actually, this widget has been grabbed up by Canada. They're using it in Canadian government to do this and to actually justify why they're doing most of their meetings electronically now. So this is something that's sort of on the mitigation side, but it actually had a pretty big impact, and we're kind of excited to see it having sort of a life of its own. So here are our modules. We actually just added one from one of the Weather Channel reporters actually did a really cool module for us that's been added to this. But these are available right now at climatelearningnetwork.net for any extension agent. You get CEUs for them. You get a certificate. The certificates, as long as you hold on to them, can be used when we get the actual training deployed as well. Okay, so I'm going to focus on one in particular, and this is our module on climate change communication. And I'm just going to go over a little bit of what Dr. Steve McNulty, who runs the Southeastern Regional Climate Hub, says about communicating climate change in the Southeast. Out there, I think, probably more so than most places in the country, we have a lot of resistance when we're talking about climate change. And it's, you know, just like every extension community, every farming community, you really have to understand that community to be able to communicate with them. So this is a little geared towards the Southeast, but I think a lot of these concepts can be used on a national level. So he came up with this program called the Elfland Approach. And once you say that, you don't forget it. Elfland, it's kind of, you know, corny, but it definitely sticks with you. So this, each one of these is an acronym. Each one of these stands for a different step of the process. And I'm just going to show you a little bit of what he does when he talks to communities. First of all, you need to find out who you're going to talk to and get the information that you need to talk to the folks that you're going to go talk to. This is who we use in the Southeast. Of course, you know, this room, it's no problem finding this information. So this is sort of a step that we can skip if we're already familiar with extension and climate change. In the Southeast, in order to get in these communities, you have to eat a lot of barbecue. I am a vegetarian, which is really funny because I just eat macaroni and cheese and potato salad when I go out and visit farms. Steve loves the barbecue, so he had this slide in here. But really what we're trying to do is get into the community, see what they're thinking about, see what they need, see what they're talking about. Finding commonality is a really hard thing to do. Get everybody in the room on the same page. You have organic farmers all the way to, you know, chemical-heavy farmers in the Southeast. So we always use this survey to start out, and it's pretty interesting how things turn out. So has climate always varied in the past? Will it always vary? Everybody says yes. Of course, we agree with that. Then you say, is it negatively impacting some farms? And in the Southeast, yeah, we're having drought right now. So, of course, they're going to say yes, that's happening. Is this going to keep happening? Yes. Everybody's going to respond yes to that. We're going to agree with them. And then finally, if you could manage your farm better, your forest better, would you? And, of course, they're not going to say no to that either. So at this point, you kind of get them thinking, okay, yeah, there's stuff happening out there. We're going to need to adapt to it. How can we do this? So they may think that's a trick. They're like, okay, here it comes. They're going to show a picture of a polar bear on the ice cap floating. It's going to be horrible. In the Southeast, we have this interesting thing where in parts of Alabama, it isn't cooling. It isn't warming. I'm sorry. It's actually cooling. So you have farmers in Alabama saying, this is a bunch of, you know, hooey. I've seen it cool on my farm. And we admit that. We show them this figure and let them know, yeah, you're right. We also show them that drought is sporadic across the country. It's moving all the time. We can't necessarily predict when and where, but we know that it's going to happen and it's going to be worse as time goes on. And then you find out what they need. We have a lot of disasters in the Southeast related to climate. Sea level rise has been a huge issue for our coastal regions, which actually goes into salinization of farmland. So it's something that they can all relate to. And once you start putting the numbers on it, when you tell them it's billions of dollars that are affecting their region, they start to listen to you a little bit more. Another thing you need to do is nurturing projects. That's our N. The Southeast Climate Hub has established the Climate Hub's Toolshed, which is a great resource on a national level. So this is actually a searchable database for all regions and all commodities about climate change. There's a wealth of information on this Toolshed. I highly recommend going to the search website through the USDA and checking this out. This is where you find your tools. These are the tools that we're supplying to our extension agents to get this job done. And then the most important in this whole thing is deliver. Basically, what we're trying to do is make sure that once we get them thinking about it, they start making changes, they start working on projects, we don't leave them hanging. So we want to be there to support their decision making. We want to be there to provide them with the support that they need to get this done and to not disappear tomorrow. So it's sort of a relationship that you start building and you continue to build to keep them involved, to keep them listening. And again, what we're trying to do is just get these agents to start thinking about climate when they're out on the field, talking to their farmers, help them make their decisions based on what we think is going to happen with the climate. And again, it's all risk management, right? I mean, we can't tell them exactly what's going to happen, but we can give them the tools to make intelligent decisions based on what we think the risks are going to be. And that's all I have. How are we on time? All right, great. Do you have time for questions? Yeah, I think so. Right now, again, we're at the development phase of this. So once I'll give you my card, because once we get this done and once we get this first cohort out the door and get the feedback, we'll be going to all the extension programs and trying to get this deployed. So that'd be great to have the end. So thank you. Yeah, I think those listservs are attempt to do that. You know, those listservs are really trying to get that information exchange where we will be independent of that. We're providing a forum for those communities to develop. And really, you know, this was originally envisioned as this network that had back and forth. Limited resources sort of made us target this climate literacy. But I think hopefully those listservs will serve to that function and actually give us an opportunity to see those communities develop on their own and sort of maintain themselves. So I'm you know, we have 20-odd communities that we're trying to develop. If one of them takes hold, I think we're doing great, and I think that's a good outcome that is measurable. So. Yeah, and I, you know, this is a broad topic that affects everybody. So regardless of the granularity that we're working with on the ground, we want to get this out to the people. But of course, losing those county agents, I'm in a state of 165 counties, and we actually have an agent in every county. And when the recession hit, we actually took, you know, we made decisions that would allow us to bring that back rapidly. But that's not happening in every state, and it's sad that we're losing it, definitely. Well, they're by, like, aquaculture, forestry. It's broader.
Oh,
yeah,
regional.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they regional? Or
right now, it's only Northeast, and it will be regional by the hubs. So if you're familiar with the hubs, we're going to stick to that geography. Thank you.